The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Another weekend, my friends. And, well, some pretty good performance out of the market, I must say, this week. And, well, November was okay, and December, for the most part, the probabilities are it'll at least remain stable. But 2023 is just around the corner. I have to say, I'm feeling a little chilly about the year. Jack, you know, I've chatted about this stuff every day in the office. And, you know, honestly, Jack, kudos to you. Kudos to the team. I have to say, you know, we are getting very close to break even on our returns for this year. You know, call it down 2% on the year. And in such a dire year, to be down 2% is a huge victory. I truly feel like celebrating this year. And Jack, you and I are coming off of 20% plus years, which are excellent. But I don't feel as satisfied as I do this year. As my kids would say, that's very satisfying, Daddy. It is satisfying.
Eh? Well, it is, Wolf. And the fact is, those 3 years, a lot of people were having market gains, right? The market was up. S&P 500 was up in and around 20%. NASDAQ was outperforming. So we were just basically keeping in line with some of the most aggressive high-performing indexes.
Which is good.
We were outperforming because we're Canadian investors. TSX was lagging in 2021. But the fact is, right now, you know, our house is worth more than our neighbors, meaning we've gone down a lot less than most people in the market. S&P's down 15, NASDAQ's down 30. We're flat. Not a bad place to be in a very tough market.
I think down 2.5%. And the TSX.
I call that flat, Wolf.
It is, but I don't want to mislead. I want to be as transparent as possible. Again, we are in the business of money. We want to be as pure and as honest about it at all times. I don't anyone ever questioning our integrity. Never. I don't have time for that.
But I would say the negative feeling going into 2023 is maybe a lot of recency bias. There's a lot of negativity out there, a lot of negative sentiment. The S&P 500 was down 27% this year. In my books, that's, you know, discounting a meaningful recession in 2023. Market is forward-looking. The question is, are we headed towards a soft landing where the Fed sort of sticks a decent landing or maybe break something and go a little harder than everyone's expecting?
Look, our next guest, Aubrey from CI Global Asset Management. Aubrey Hearn, Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager. He's joined CI Asset Management in 2005. He's been working on Bay Street for over 15 years. And lots of runway, I must say, in front of you. You're still a very, very young man, Aubrey. I'm jealous of your youth. But kudos to you. You have enough experience now. And obviously, they like you a lot at CI. You manage what just under what or just over $4 billion of assets. So you know what's going on. I look at your numbers, your 10-year return, well over 10% on all the mandates I'm looking at here. Excellent results there. So let's spend some time with you, Aubrey. I want to talk to you about 2023 and welcome to Hi-Fi Radio.
Well, perfect. And thanks, Wolf and Jack, for having me on today.
It's an absolute pleasure. Again, for those who don't know, Aubrey used to work very, very close to a good friend of ours, Sandy McIntyre, back in the days at Century. Century, of course, was taken over by CI. But Aubrey, Jack and I spent some time with our chief strategist, Tony Dwyer. I'm sure you know who Tony Dwyer is. And he's quite concerned about 2023, especially considering the bull move, call it a bear market rally or a sort of a new bull market, call it what you want, and it'll only be truly labeled once we are well in front of it or well through it. But he's, you know, with the move we've had, there's not a whole lot of upside left, and he is expecting with labor market conditions to worsen coming into 2023, hence affecting earnings as well. He'd be more of a, he didn't say seller, but he certainly said you want to be much more cautious in here. Wait for a good pullback and then set the deck for, I think, longer-term investment horizons. In other words, he's thinking maybe the S&P gets down to 3,300. Right now it's at 4,000. The 3,300 point he thinks would be an excellent entry point for mid- to longer-term investors. Aubrey, what's your thought on 2023?
Yeah, so I think I'd be slightly more positive than that, just given that your intro there in terms of the negative returns that we've experienced thus far in 2022. To your point, you know, flat is just amazing performance relative to what some of the indices have done. So
thank you.
So consequently, I think that a lot of the bad news has been priced in, and really that bad news comes from a variety of different factors. Of course, you know, inflation being a big one. But if you look at some of the inflation data, and if you look at some of Powell's commentary earlier in the week, it looks like that the Fed is in pause mode, which I think is great for the markets, and hence we've seen, you know, a good pushback or a good some good returns this week in the markets. And I think, you know, that bodes well for 2023 as well. And so we'd be more in the soft landing camp. And I think, you know, as you suggested, that the market tends to look on a forward looking basis as a discounting mechanism. So if you think along those lines, we feel that at some point during 2023, absolutely agree, I think there'll be recession. But if the recession is shallow, people will start looking towards the end of 2023 and perhaps onwards to 24 with some better economic news, and thus willing to put higher multiples on some of the 2024 numbers. So that's how we're thinking about it on our team.
Again, this year was the year when the stock market and the bond market and many other markets, i.e. global currency markets, receded significantly. NASDAQ down over 30%, S&P at its peak to trough down 27%. That is discounting, or did discount, a lot of bad news. And just this morning, Aubrey, Jack and I were talking about the potential for soft landing. Jack's in the hard landing camp. I'm sort of flirting with soft landing because I'm thinking maybe the Fed has gotten it pretty good, not right, but better than the street, because the street, I think, is expecting something to break and for the Fed to go too far and create a deeper recession than is otherwise necessary. But that said, we got to be very, very respectful of the environment. Yes, 2023 is the third year of a presidential cycle. That's good. January tends to be a good month. February, not so good, but March, another good month. So we're still in the sweet spot from a seasonal perspective. The question is the labor market, when the Fed actually does pivot, because the labor market remains very, very tight and wages continue to be pretty sticky. And we need, again, the theory is labor has to break before they can stop raising interest rates. What do you think of that, Aubrey?
Yeah, I agree with that fully, Wolf. So, and I think on that front, you know, there's some good news for sure in that, well, not necessarily good news for the economy, but in terms of the wage rate inflation. So if you look at technology companies, for example, Amazon, Meta, if you look at Google, you know, if you look at Stripe, there's a number of layoffs that's been announced in the last few weeks. And and largely that's a result of just lower spending, lower CapEx, and a more conservative consumer. So I think that'll flow through the economy. You know, less CapEx will result in less spending from other companies, which, you know, as the consumer tightens up and the layoffs increase, I think all that plays into a lower inflationary environment. So I think that could be a good news story where, you know, we're not anticipating that the unemployment rate goes up materially from the 3.6 it is today. However, if in fact it does tick up, the labor market becomes less tight, I think that reduces the bargaining power of employees, and thus can take some of the sting out of some of the wage growth that we've seen in the last few months. So I think, again, that could be like more of a peaky type of number, and in turn, you're going to see some lower wage rates going forward, which would be good for the inflation picture.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we got Aubrey Hearn on from CI Global Management. Jack and I read a good piece. We have a partner at Canaccord, Aubrey. It's called Morgan Stanley. So we have great access now to their portal, shall I say. Brilliant, brilliant authors at that company. I'm delighted to have them as a partner. They helped me out a lot. But Morgan wrote some good work this week saying that the stock market is disconnected from the real economy when it comes to technology. What it means is the S&P 500 was flirting with, what, 25-30% tech weighting. There is a NASDAQ, which is primarily tech. Tech dominates, or is a driving force of the public markets. But in the real economy, it is less than, I think, 1% of the real economy working in true IT. So the layoffs that they announced, what, Amazon 10,000, Apple 10,000, that will not really affect the real economy a whole lot. It's truly only 20,000 layoffs in the grand scheme of things.
I would say the other point that I would make, Wolf, is the fact that technology overhired throughout the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So all these layoffs that are making the headlines right now, if they go through as expected, maybe takes them back to 2019 or 2020 levels. So lots of layoffs, but it's because they have people that were not productive. Money was cheap. They didn't actually do what corporations are supposed to do, is call individuals that aren't actually productive in their within their company.
Aubrey, I have to ask you, I'm looking at your fun facts, and again, it is old. It's as of June, and I know obviously you do participate in a bit of turnover in your portfolio. Are you still long the FANG stocks? Your number one position was Alphabet, a.k.a. Google. Your number 10 position was Amazon, and your number 7 position was Meta. We exited, by the way, all three of those positions. Are you still long? They obviously do look a lot cheaper, and they certainly look. I just look at Okta today. What a bounce in that security software. Okta up some 20% on a slight beat. So these things can turn. When they do turn, it'll be violent. I don't want to miss them, but I'm not there yet either. I'm just curious. What's your take on those three positions? Are you still dominant in your portfolio?
Yeah, they are, Wolf. And I think you made some great points there. And Jack, you mentioned something that was interesting as well, just in terms of, you know, the overhiring, if you will, in the last couple of years from some of the tech players. And I think, that could act as a cushion or support for earnings in 2023. Because, I mean, let's face it, Amazon went out and hired literally 800,000 people in the last couple of years. And, they have an algorithm that would suggest that the revenue growth that they've experienced during the pandemic would continue. And, of course, there's been some great structural growth for Amazon, but it didn't continue at the rapid pace that we've seen in 2020. So they're laying people off. But just think about the amount of people that they can let go at some of these organizations. And I think they're taking a finer look at some of those layoffs, because they are under pressure from investors. To your point, stocks are down anywhere between 30%, 40%, 50%. So I think those are great opportunities now. Not all FANGs are created equally. So we would have more of an overweight and more optimism towards Alphabet as well as Amazon. And just the thought there again is that I feel that they've been unduly kind of bucketed with the NASDAQ names. And, I get it. And to your point, it's been a tough year for NASDAQ. But keep in mind, these companies literally make tens and tens of billions of dollars. They have, in the case of Alphabet, over $100 billion of cash in the balance sheet. So that's very different from a tech company that's, doesn't make any earnings or just trades on a EV to revenue basis and may make some money down the road. So I think for those two names in particular, it's going to be a great 2023.
Yeah, and Microsoft is a name I'm flirting with. I'm not there yet, but again, what a great company, continues to grow, in the mid double digits, about 10, 15, 18%. Great cash generator. And you're right, these companies, for tech companies of such size, they're not expensive. The question is, the market doesn't want them right now. But we're going to take a quick break, get back with Aubrey. I want them. Aubrey manages over $4 billion. I like hanging out with guys like Aubrey, because this is how I learn. Well, and try to keep it even. That's what it's all about in 2022. Quick break, get right back to Hi-Fi Radio 640 Toronto.
Let's take a break. Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
I am lifted when I'm up. I can't get down, can't get down, can't get level. When I'm up, I can't get down. Get my feet back on the ground. When I'm up, I can't get down. Get down, can't get level.
Little Great Big Sea. Yeah, I think they changed those lyrics, those Maritimers, if they worked on Bay Street. They'd get down. Don't worry. The market will take you down. Hey, Aubrey, you know what I'm talking about. Aubrey Hearn from CI Global Asset Management. A fine, fine Maritimer. In fact, no one knows us. He's from Newfoundland. That's right. A Newfoundlander is managing money here on Bay Street, and kudos to him. Salt of the earth people. I'll tell you one thing. Honesty. Hey, that's the first thing when I think about a Maritimer, is a good, honest person. And that matters in money management, doesn't it, Aubrey?
Yeah, I like to think so.
Well, indeed.
I like the song. Hopefully that song will bode well for 2023 up and Can't Get Down. So we'll see.
I hope it does. Let me ask you, since we start 2023, just for fun, U.S. over Canada or Canada over U.S.?
I go U.S. over Canada. I think tech, I might be biased, I manage more U.S. names, but just tech has been so dislocated this year in 22. And again, I get it, it's the interest rates and high growth stocks and consequently, you know, those get hit disproportionately hard. But I think inflationary backdrop starts to cede, I believe that people will become more constructive with putting higher multiples. Like you mentioned Microsoft before the break. Yeah, I pulled the trigger on that one, Wolf.
You sold it or you bought it?
No, I would buy it today.
You buy it today, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, it's not an inexpensive stock.
Nope.
But it still only trades at 24 times earnings. But if you believe that interest rates are kind of capped here and they're not on this continuous upward trajectory, I believe that there's a lot of upside for a company like that that can grow, you know, mid-teens. So just given that tech weight, I think that you know, the S&P 500 will do better than the TSX next year.
The issue, again, and Jack and I have been flirting with this, you know, is this like 2000, where tech went into a wreck and it was a long-lived wreck? Microsoft was dead money for almost a decade. Likewise with Amazon, and you go down the list, and then they finally woke up in mid-2020s, and away they went, trading at, once again, excessive valuations. Again, yeah, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, they all trade at a PE, price earnings ratio, which is amazing, of about, what, 25? Whereas most tech was trading at a price to sales of 30.
Not most tech, Wolf. I can say the high growth tech was the snowflakes of the world. So you have to put that into perspective.
DocuSign?
Wouldn't have been quite as high, maybe 20. But the point is, mega cap tech, that was last decade's theme.
Mm-hmm.
Mega cap tech is still, I'm going to guess, around 25% of the S&P 500. So what we're hearing from our strategist, Aubrey, is you're looking at more equal weight S&P 500 as opposed to index weight, because there's still a disproportionate amount going towards those mega cap names, 20%, something like that. Just like Wolfgang was talking about in the previous episode, that's disproportionate relative to the earnings of the market and the U.S. economy. What would you say to that?
Yeah, so I think it's good to split it up in terms of the mega cap names. I just think we're talking about two different things, where the Amazons and Microsoft, some of the names that we discussed today, putting out billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of free cash flow and earnings. And so I don't think the market is, multiples are very demanding on those names. In fact, if you were to look at some of the mega cap tech names, they're growing probably, you know, 3-4 times faster than the S&P 500, but, you know, maybe have a 30, depends on which name we're talking about, a 30, 25, in some cases, a market multiple. So they're not really trading that much materially higher than the market, but at the same time, they're growing 3 or 4 times faster. So I think that's a good place to be. But, you know, some of the other names you mentioned, like Zoom and DocuSign and Snowflake, you know, sometimes even if a stock is down 60-70%, doesn't mean it's good value. And in fact, you know, some of those names, I would 100% agree, are still, you know, massively inflated. The multiples are still too high. And I think there's it could be the tech wreck could continue for those types of companies, just given that profitability is not coming anytime soon. But in terms of the mega caps, I'd be willing to add to those types of positions, just given the cash flow levels there.
I have to look back one day, just anecdotally, and you may know this, Aubrey. Coming out of the tech wreck in 2000, IBM sort of, at the time, would appear more like an Amazon, Google, Microsoft today. How did it do when tech was wrecking? Did IBM attract some of that money?
Yeah, so that IBM held in better, yeah. Because it didn't have the kind of the demonstrable valuation levels of some of the other names, but it can get caught in the trade, so to speak. But there's other names like Cisco is often cited as a name where it traded at, to your point, Jack, it was, I don't know, 100 times sales and
yes.
Didn't do anything for a couple of decades. So I can see that, and there's Cisco's of the world today, I would argue again, like Zoom and DocuSign, Snowflake and many others that would fit that bill. However, you know, other companies like an IBM back then actually did materially better, although, of course, they had their own issues later in the decade and never quite recovered from that.
Correct.
But I do think there's light at the end of the tunnel for the Amazons, Or even Apple, I think that's a little expensive here, frankly, but I think you could do okay in that. But for Amazon, Microsoft, and Alphabet, I think they're great buys here.
Yeah, just with the end of free money, I would say, Aubrey, there has been a pivot, and it's towards technology. We still want to see the growth, but now we want to see profitable growth, and that's what the market is demanding, and that's what is being rewarded right now. And going back to your Century days, you guys were very process-driven, so maybe we could dive into that a little bit. You guys are very cash flow-focused. Is that something you continue as a manager at CI?
Absolutely. So the way we look at investing is we think about investing as a business owner. So similar to Warren Buffett, we're looking at discounted cash flows and pretending that we own the entire business versus watching a stock go up and down on a screen. And so we tend to look at free cash flow yield of a business that say for Microsoft example, it's a 5 or 6%. And then in turn, what can that free cash flow grow at? And then we build models based on our assumptions there, conservative assumptions, and then we discount that back to the present. And if we get a big margin of safety or otherwise, we feel like there's 30%+ upside in the name, we tend to buy. The other thing we think a lot about is barriers to entry. And really that comes as a function of buying companies that operate in oligopolies where it's very challenging for someone to get into the space to compete. And I think that's particularly important today, just given the inflationary numbers that we're seeing. I do think inflation will roll over. However, I think it's going to be higher for longer. And thus, you want to be investing in companies that aren't commoditized, that can, for example, like railways. It doesn't matter if inflation is 6, 7, or 8. They're going to be able to pass that inflation along to their clients, just given that there's literally nowhere else to go to transport goods. And so we like those types of businesses in that environment, and we continue to employ that strategy.
It was funny. I was just thinking about the rails as you were speaking about all the factors that you like to look for. I was just thinking about our two choo-choos here in Canada, and I own both of them across our mandate, CNCP. And honestly, Aubrey, unless valuation gets stretched for those names, because in my career, I'm going to say the rails are traded always at about 20 times earnings. So the only time I would sell a rail is if it started trading at 30 or 40 times earnings and at a ridiculous levels. Beyond that, I think they continue to have pricing power. They are a great hedge against inflation. Zero competition coming at them. There will not be a third railway in Canada in my lifetime. And there also will not be one railway in Canada in my lifetime. I think it will stick at two railways. Are you long the rails and the Canadian rails specifically, Aubrey?
We are. Our preference, Wolf, would be CP. And I think you highlighted some of the reasons as to why. Not a lot of competition. You're not going to build a railway anytime soon. I'm not sure if the government could build much of anything right these days.
It can build a luxury tax. That's coming at you, Aubrey.
Maybe an extra consumption tax too.
Yeah.
But it's challenging to get some of these larger projects off the ground. And I mean, look, what's interesting about the railways is that the customers come to them, and that if you're building new industrial capacity or new automotive plant, you're actually building it closer to the railways because that's the cheapest method to ship goods. So they have embedded volume that way. And your point on pricing is a good one. It has been an extremely challenging environment for inflation, but CP just keeps passing that inflation along. And then the final kicker, I think, for CP, which is interesting, is that they're in the process of buying KSU, which is a railway that operates in the U.S. as well as Mexico. And Keith Creel is the head of CP and just does a fabulous job. He's worked under Hunter years ago as a CEO of CN. And so I think there's a lot of synergies that they're going to be able to take out of KSU. And in turn, I think that's going to drive outsized earnings growth for CP for the next 3 years. So we like CP a lot right here.
The funniest picture I remember of Warren Buffett, Jack, you showed it to me, is when Warren Buffett bought Burlington Northern. And then they took a photograph of him in front of his model train set, and Warren Buffett playing with his new toy. The whole railway bought Burlington Northern. He does a few things right, you got to admit, and I think Aubrey, you and I are on the same page with Buffettology, and Jack is a big fan of Buffett as well. Another stock I'm seeing here in your portfolio, and darling to almost dust, not quite, is Brookfield. You own Brookfield Asset Management. You own Brookfield Infrastructure Partner. So do we. We also own Brookfield Renewable. Oh, you own Brookfield Business. But Brookfield went bust this year. Everything Brookfield has gone dead cold. It was a go-to name, finest management team, irreplaceable assets, pension-style investing, you know, cash flow generating. You go on. But the market right now is not impressed with BAM and its subsidiaries. What's your thought?
Yeah, so I understand why the market doesn't like the name. I think it's related to anything private equity. So you're seeing similar trading activity in KKR,
Blackstone,
in U.S., Blackstone, yeah. Carlyle Group, you name it. It's been a tough year. And the rationale is that, look, I mean, debt interest levels are higher. So it's hard for private equity companies to fund deals because they're going to borrow a lot of money to buy stuff. Like, I appreciate that. And then in turn, if you look at the equity market, it's really challenging from an IPO perspective, so it's hard for them to monetize assets. So I can appreciate those two concerns. However, if you were to think about Brookfield, even last quarter, they're growing. Their earnings are distributable cash at about a 39% clip. People need to invest. As you know, Wolf and Jack, they need to put their money somewhere. They can't just hide it under a mattress. And Brookfield has one of the best long-term track records around in private equity. So they're literally out there raising tens and tens of billions of dollars. They think they can get up to $100 billion in the next year or so. They're sitting on over $100 billion of dry powder. And so this weakness in the market, whether it's public equities, whether it's private companies having lower valuations, they're able to take advantage of that. So we think it's going to be a solid fundraising year for them. And really, this environment should be a good environment for them to deploy some of that excess cash they have. And then finally, on Brookfield Asset Management, they're actually spinning off the asset manager in the coming days. And that's interesting because they kind of recognize the same value that we do, in that they think that the spinoff will create some of the parts that's greater than the combined entity. And the reason there is that this asset manager that they have is only trading at about 11 times earnings. And really, if you think about something that's growing, say 39 or 40%, that multiple doesn't make any sense. So we like Brookfield Asset Management, and we'll buy today for sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to agree. It is a true and few, Jack, buy and hold candidate, for the decade plus. And honestly, Aubrey, if I could find a portfolio that I could have a turnover of zero, in other words, that I didn't have to sell a single position next year, I would find that to be absolutely euphoric. But, I like to pick up a bar of soap every now and then, because, Aubrey, you know what happens with a bar of soap? The more you touch it, the smaller it gets. It's Hi-Fi Radio 640 Toronto, back with Aubrey Hearn from CI Global Asset Management right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Don't do it, my friend. Don't jump. Take the mountain and just keep seeing. Marshall Tucker Band. Is that not cool? Aubrey, you like that?
I love that.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Oh, yeah. Indeed. Yeah. It's Hi-Fi Radio. We like to give you some fidelity as we set the table, well, for some talk about currency, money, that is. Oil. You like oil, Aubrey?
We don't invest too much in oil. We own some Enbridge. It's just the nature of our investments. We tend to buy companies that generate more stable free cash flow and grow it over time. We haven't had the best track record in determining what oil prices are going to be. And then, although admittedly it's a great backdrop for oil and gas stocks, but as we know, if oil prices were to fall, oil stocks would get hit dramatically, and it's just very challenging for us to forecast that. So it's a very small weight in our portfolio.
And so I assume commodities overall are not a big part of what you invest in.
No, so we do a lot of small cap investing as well. So we run actually a few billion on the small cap side. We haven't talked too much about today. And given that, you would expect for us to invest a lot, just given that it's more of a Canadian focused fund in commodities. However, we tend to buy, say, companies like Cargojet. Like, they ship overnight cargo around the country. They have about 90% share of anything that you ship overnight through, say, for example, Amazon or UPS. And so as you can probably think about, like, that company makes a lot of cash flow and is more predictable and dependable. There's barriers to entry and they're able to pass through inflation.
Great company.
And so it's just easier to get your head around that.
Do you own Exchange Income Fund?
No, we don't own that one, no.
Yeah, that's another very, very interesting company. Government contracts for up in the, basically, tundra. All the remote parts of Canada, medical services and the likes.
A lot of surveillance, too, Wolf.
Government surveillance. Ooh. Yeah. Amazing what they can do with their surveillance business, we learned. International business for them, tracking submarines and drug cartel and the likes. A very, very interesting business. Again, very, very much focused on generating stable, free cash flow. Let's stick in the land of your smaller cap businesses. Again, I like smaller companies because over time a smaller company can grow quicker than a large company. It's just mathematics. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can actually make more money in small cap names than you can in large cap names. Friends at home, you know, honestly, if you make the returns of a large cap market, you will be just fine. But every now and then, everyone else will find you buy small cap, but no speculation. You guys don't spec, obviously, Aubrey. It's not what you do. You guys are buying businesses of quality. Let's go down your list then of your small cap ideas. I see you got, again, Brookfield Asset Management in there. So that's obviously a bit of a large cap slide in, I take it. You got Liberty Media. That's interesting. That's all is a Malone's family group, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that one's an interesting one. It's actually the Atlanta Braves. So you can buy the Atlanta Braves as a public owner, and which is not a bad deal given that they won the World Series last year. Didn't have so much luck this year, but has done pretty well. And these are kind of the wonky things that can happen at small caps. So the valuation for the Atlanta Braves publicly went down to, call it, $16 or $17. However, there's the Forbes valuation for the Atlanta Braves, meaning that there's a valuation that these types of franchises actually trade at privately, and it's around $33 actually, a couple billion more than what the stock market was ascribing to. But it's been a challenging year for small caps. People generally, what ends up happening is that they tend to sell small caps when there's fears of recession. But overall, like, we're even more bulled up on small caps than we are large cap tech, just given that small caps today, they trade at about a 20% discount or 80% of large caps. And to your point, wow, Wolf, small caps outperform over time because they do grow faster. And generally, small caps trade at a 20% premium to large caps. So that means that right now, they're trading at about a 50% discount to where they would normally trade versus large caps. So we're pretty bulled up on small caps right now.
You know, it's funny. Kathleen just finished, my wife, she finished reading Elton John's book. I bought it for after we saw Elton John perform. And he wanted to get in on the action. He bought himself a soccer team, his local soccer team. And they're actually completely bottom ranked in the division. But he got very serious about taking this team up, and he succeeded. Rod Stewart owns a soccer team as well. And apparently during this World Cup, I think one of the teams was up for sale or being bid around. Well, did you catch that story, Aubrey?
No, it was interesting. Like, so there's a company, it wasn't the World Cup, but so we own another company in a fund. Well, everyone would know it's Manchester United, one of the most infamous.
That must be the one, yes. That was a story. Good, so, carry on.
Yeah, so it's exactly like the Braves. So the Forbes valuation for and internal valuations for Manchester United is around $4 billion. The stock went down to $2 billion. Hmm. And so we're buying kind of hand over fist, and you don't know when that's going to close, but there's so much private equity money out there. And we talked about in the last segment, Wolf, there's a lot of cash flow. There's a lot of smart private money. And at some point they'll step in and say, well, this has just gone too much and that these public valuations don't make sense. And so the story there, we'll see if it'll actually consummate in a deal, but the Glazer family, they're actually based in Montreal. They're just deciding that they kind of had enough. They had some issues with Cristiano Ronaldo as well, and sort of going to sell the company. But Chelsea was recently sold, and there's 250 bidders. So we'll see how this process goes, but we think it'll be at a pretty healthy premium, certainly to the $17 that it traded at a few weeks ago. So it's a good news story.
We're talking to the $6 billion man, Aubrey Hearn from CI Global Asset Management. Yep, this Maritimer manages $6 billion, and he does an amazing job. I'm looking at his numbers, fantastic. And I can tell he's sticks to his knitting, which is, I think, key when you're buying an asset manager. At least you know what you're getting. Again, there's no free lunch on Bay Street. But my friends, that's what we have COD for. Stay tuned. We're going to get right back to Hi-Fi Radio 640 in Toronto.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Above, indeed. Gotta hold on. That's what investing, my friends, is all about. You gotta get on plan and stick with a plan. And that also includes saving. Never stop those contributions. Don't do it. Jack and I, all day long, really what we do is we read and read and read and read and read. We get information overload coming at us, but it's important. It's why we gather these nuggets of wisdom. And when we're tired of reading, we call guys like Aubrey and bring him on the radio show because find out what he read for the last number of weeks. But had a piece put up by Manulife, simple stuff. And, you know, I like simplicity, and I know simple well, and I keep going back to simplicity. Point number one, bear markets happen. 48-year-old is claiming it's the seventh bear market in my adult life. They happen a lot. In fact, you can pretty much expect two bear markets every decade. I agree. For the rest of your life, I also agree. Number two, setbacks are the result of those bear markets. There's no strategy or level of sophistication going to guarantee you'll never experience a setback. Jack and I, well, we got lucky this year. We're close to even. I think that luck had some hard work to do with it, but by goodness me, I always warn my clients, you can expect your account at some point to be down, you know, 18 to 20%. It will happen. But if you stick with quality, it'll be a temporary position. Number three, cash is the oxygen of freedom. That's a pretty powerful statement, eh, Jack? But investors are sleeping well this year, had a pile of cash. Certainly if you had a bunch of crypto, you weren't sleeping so well. Number four, this one I like, things change quickly, way quicker than we think. Aubrey, when I came into 2023 or two, as with Jack and I, we always start the year, well, how's the year going to play out? Well, you know, we'll see. It won't be too bad. We'll see. You know, we waffle and we're okay. And all right, let's go for some lunch and read some more. And, oh, my. Boy, oh, boy. I mean, we were, you have to admit, you must have been taken by surprise. I think the central bank was taken by surprise by its own actions.
100%.
100%. So things did change quickly this year, didn't they, Aubrey?
No, absolutely, Wolf. And I think it's a good point there and kind of marrying those two thoughts together to stay invested. And look, there's things come around the corner. I mean, no one would have predicted the Russia-Ukraine crisis. And really, I think that really led us to that next level of inflation, if you will. And I mean, look, think a couple of years back, it was the COVID. Didn't have that in my crystal ball either. Even the great financial crisis didn't have that one figured out either. So it's very challenging.
that's exactly it. I have a crystal ball on my desk to boot. And a Buddha. I think the Buddha better than the crystal ball.
But I think you know, clients can get confused in that, and there shouldn't really be an expectation to figure out these big events, because I think the important thing to remember throughout all of that, you would have compounded wealth at, you know, high single digits, depending on what index, or close to double digits over the last 20 years, just given that if you had stayed invested, if you averaged down in some of the tumultuous times during recessions. So I think it is important just to stay invested and of course, you know, follow the portfolios prudently, but don't try to time the market.
Yeah, I would just add in there, Aubrey, the fact is that great financial crisis, COVID in 2020, inflation in 2022, the reason why those things move the market so much is because they weren't expected and they were not priced in. So going back to a couple of segments, margin of safety matters when investing, when with just your regular living expenses, live beneath your means, save for a rainy day. All the fundamental stuff that we talk about is very important. Why? Because it allows you to get through these periods of time and allows you time to compound your money.
Hey, I wanted to pivot around. You can laugh at me, Jack, and friends at home, woe is me, first world problem I'm about to share with you. My first world problem was I went out for a solo lunch. I like to do that every now and then, to my favorite little counter, and where I sit at the bar, and I had a beautiful salad, I had a beautiful plate of pasta, and I had a beautiful glass of wine, and the bill was a beautiful $95 for lunch. It was a $95 lunch, Aubrey. That lunch used to cost me about $60. Again, it's something I do once a month or so, and I'm allowed to spend $60 once a month. But $95, so it's a 50% pop in inflation. Of course, that flows right through the tipping as well. That's a whole other discussion.
And to the tax, Wolf. Governments love inflation.
That's right, they do. So food inflation, again, I know you're not a commodity guy, but you look at everything, Aubrey. I know that, and you have an army of people around you helping you look at everything. And if you don't look, they pick you up and turn you in the direction of it. I know they do. Is this food inflation permanent? Again, you're seeing reprieve in the 2x4s, Aubrey. 2x4s came down. I also bought a lobster, by the way. A fresh lobster cost me $50. You're a Maritimer. What do you think of buying a $50? And I had to carry the thing home. And I had to kill it myself. It was 50 bucks.
You should fly to Newfoundland. They're much cheaper out there. I think my uncle has some. But no, you're right on inflation. My wife and I had an anniversary dinner there couple months ago, and I think it came out to $250, and was like, well, thankfully that only comes around once a year. but on your point, yeah, I do think not the same levels that we're seeing now, right? Depends on what food product you're referring to. Like, you hear like butter's up, 20-30%, and poultry is up mid-teens, and you can kind of go through the cost that it took to cook a turkey dinner versus last year is up 20-something%. So I think that'll subside, but some of these supply chain issues are real. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of exports that came from Ukraine, from Russia, for that matter. And I think from that perspective, Canada's in a good spot in that they make barley, they make wheat, and they make a lot of the things that come out of that region. But the unfortunate thing is there's still supply chain disruptions, although they are easing, and there's still, inventory issues. So as long as those are around, unfortunately, I think we're going to be paying more for anniversary dinners and going out for lunches.
Well, I'll give you a tidbit. Do not buy the squeezable condiments. Don't buy squeezable mayonnaise. Kathleen did the comparison. 450 mil of Hellmann's in a squeezable, $9. 500 mil in a jar, $4. So you get more, you pay half, but you got to use a spoon and wash it. Oh, my. Oh, my. Hey, Aubrey Hearn, I can't thank you enough, man. The full show dedicated to CI. I want to thank your team for allowing us to spend an hour with you. I know they pay a lot of money to keep you reading. Well, I hope we helped you a little bit, at least if nothing else, a common man view on the world. Great job with your funds. You're doing an amazing job. Excellent spending an hour with you, my good friend. I do want to wish you a great Christmas and prosper in 2023. CI Global Management, Aubrey Herm, Portfolio Manager. All the best to you, my good friend. Jack, great job setting up the guests as always. I should say guest singular. You brought a star on the show yet again. Friends, be safe. Any questions about money, wolfgangklein.com, thewolfonbaystreet.com. Reach out and we will reach back. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack at wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.